You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. What's the best job in America? How about calling the newest inductees to inform them that they are now members of the Baseball Hall of Fame? How cool would that be? And every year, there are more stories. Here is the guy whose job it is to pick up the phone and dial the right number, the Secretary Treasurer of the Baseball Writers Association of America, Jack O'Connell. Jack, it's great to have you on the show. How long have you been doing this?
I've been doing this now for 22 years.
It's an amazing job. What are your emotions when you're doing it?
Well, one thing I've learned over the years, I've called 39 Hall of Famers, and there's a thread to all the phone calls, and it's usually humility. Each person at some point during that call realizes what a special moment this is. And because of that, I take it very seriously. I try to be calm, even though like a year like this, we're going to have to make three calls in a short space. I try to keep the call brief, but a lot of the players have told me afterwards that it reminded them of the, you know, when their first child was born, or you know, the day they fell in love for the first time. It's a special, special day, so I try to treat it that way. I keep it, I keep it brief, and I give them a chance to express their own emotions. You know, case of Jeff Bagwell, he was surprisingly stunned. Which surprised me because I think a lot of people thought he was going to get in this year. Tim Raines, he, of course, had to wait the longest. He sat by that phone for 10 years. And I reminded him that when Hawk Dawson was inducted, he came up to the induction ceremony, and I was sitting behind Rock in the audience, and I leaned over to him at one point and said, "You're going to be up there one of these days." I just wish it hadn't taken as long. And as for Pudge Rodriguez, he simply started crying. He's been teasing me ever since, as I'm the man that made him cry. But I've told him, I said, you're not the first, and you're not going to be the last. So the emotionalism came out, in, as it usually does, in all three of these calls.
There are some other guys that have shown a lot of emotion. I'll mention some names. You tell the stories, because they're fabulous stories, Jack. Tony Gwynn.
Well, Tony Gwynn cried the longest. He had the longest cry. In fact, I thought maybe the phone had dropped, and I finally said, "Do you need a minute?" And he said, "I need more than a minute." And he was just totally emotional, reminding me a little bit of a call I made about 5 years earlier to Ozzie Smith, who was the same way. You begin to think that maybe they hung up or they dropped the phone, but the emotion just overtook them. And like I say, Pudge was the same way this year.
How about Don Sutton?
Don Sutton was another crier. I got him on a cell phone at a golf course. He had been through a very trying year. As you may remember, he had a daughter born severely prematurely.
Right.
And she's all grown up now, Jackie.
Jacqueline.
Beautiful,
yep.
Young lady. Mm-hmm. But he and his wife had gone through a lot. And when the call came, he was in front of a bunch of fellow golfers. And he didn't care. And he was one of the toughest guys in baseball, and he just let it all out and started just crying like a baby.
Wow. And George Brett.
George Brett was another crier. But, you know, the interesting thing about Brett, and I don't do this anymore because Jane Forbes Clark wants to make sure that nobody tweets or emails information, but there was a time when I used to be able to tell a guy if someone else is going in with him. And I don't do that anymore because we don't trust that people can keep a secret. But I knew George was very close with Robin Yount, and I told him that Robin was going in with him, and that's when he started crying.
Wow.
So he was crying more for his friend than for himself.
That was one of the best calls. And George, not the kind of guy you would think that would be given to emotions like that, Jack.
No, you wouldn't. It was, but if you know what, Ed, it's great to hear it on the other end of the phone.
Oh, I can imagine.
It's great to know that these guys really appreciate the writers for putting them in the Hall of Fame, and you know, it's the reward I get for doing this job. This is the special, 20 or 25 minutes, whatever it takes to do two or three calls. And it just feels great on my side of the on my side of the phone.
Let me mention a couple other guys, and you tell us the stories. Kirby Puckett.
Well, Kirby Puckett was sitting in the Twins' offices, and the phone rang. He picked it up, and a fella said, well, Kirby, I hear you're getting in the Hall of Fame today. I just want to congratulate you. And Kirby says, well, wait a minute. I mean, have you heard something? He said, no, I haven't heard anything. I just heard this was the day. He said, well, if they're going to call, they're going to call on this line. You better hang up. So he hung up because when I was going to make two calls that day, one to Kirby and one to Dave Winfield. And we're going to call Kirby first, but the line was busy. So I called Dave Winfield instead, and then I called Kirby. And, you know, they look down and they see, once they see the 212 area code, they figure that's the call.
Right, from New York. And Pedro Martinez.
Pedro Martinez had given me a phone number for a boutique hotel he was staying in Boston, and he wanted the call to come on that number. But when I called, I got the voicemail, and this is a message I'm not going to put on voicemail.
I had a
cell phone number for him, and I called him on that, and I surprised him because I, like I said, he was waiting for it on the other line, and then he too. He must have said thank you 116 times. He was so grateful, and he, too, was very emotional. I think also part of it was he was kind of caught by surprise. That was a good one. That was a good one. I can't count how many times he said gracias.
Are you surprised at guys who show a lot of emotion, Jack, and cry, even though they're gold-plated locks like Tony Gwynn?
Yeah, well, I think I said that earlier about Bagwell, who was not made a gold-plated lock. This was his seventh year, but this seemed to be his year. You know, I used to get that when we made the calls for MVP. I mean, Randy Johnson or Cy Young. Randy Johnson would react as if he won it for the first time. Billy Williams called this the good news call, and so this good news still is considered news to them. It's kind of an interesting situation.
You've got a story about Dennis Eckersley and a siren.
Well, Dennis Eckersley, first of all, he didn't get an ounce of sleep. He later said, I don't understand how guys like Bruce Sutter and Jim Rice can sit there year after year after year and that phone not ring, because he was going crazy, and it was his first year on the ballot. So he was kind of a wreck in the morning. I phoned him, and just as I was beginning to say, Eck, the baseball writers have elected you to the Hall of Fame, a siren went off on his answering machine. I mean, it sounded like a fire truck going down Fifth Avenue. And I finally had to scream at him, call the number on your machine. So he's the only guy that had to call me to find out if he was in the Hall of Fame.
What a great story.
He had to call back.
What a great story. Billy Williams categorized it so well, and so did Phil Niekro.
Well, Phil Niekro had been one of those guys that had to wait 4, 5, 6 years. I forget what it was. And when I finally got him on the phone, he gave me my new nickname, which is the Voice of Heaven.
Oh, very nice.
And then he told me, I said, well, what are you going to do now? He says, well, I'm going to call my mom, who was, I think at that time, was about 88 years old. She's been waiting for this for a long time. He said, what are you going to do? I said, you know, I'm going to call my mom, too. She's been waiting for someone to call me the Voice of Heaven. So, but I remember that the next day when Nuxie came in for the press conference, we were sitting, having a little breakfast and chatting, and he had on a brand new sports coat. He said, my wife bought me this sports coat. It's brand new. I love it. I said, I can tell it's brand new, Nuxie, because the label is still on the sleeve. We had to get a maid to come in and remove the label from his sleeve. I mean, he said he was just in a fog, you know, the whole day. So it's interesting the way these guys react to this. But the one thing that they know is that they have now entered baseball immortality. They know that getting 75% of the vote is the most difficult thing to do. And I think it all hits them on that day. And when that phone call comes, you're now in the pack.
Jack O'Connell is with us with his great stories. He is the Secretary Treasurer of the Baseball Writers Association of America. He is the guy in a country of more than 300 million people who makes the phone calls to alert former players that they're in the Baseball Hall of Fame. And the first one, Jack, was in 1995.
Well, that was Mike Schmidt, and we almost screwed up that year because we'd had a situation where the president of the association would come into New York for the press conference. And the president that year was Paul Meyer, who was with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. But Paul had worked for quite a few years in Dayton, Ohio, which was Mike Schmidt's hometown. They knew him personally. So as I mentioned to you before and to your audience, I try to keep this phone call brief, you know, because I know that the last thing this guy wants to do is sit and talk to somebody he doesn't know when he could be out, you know, telling his family and his friends and so forth. But after I told Mike that he was in, I said, by the way, I want you to talk to our president here, an old pal of yours, Paul Meyer. And then Paul proceeded to interview him for 25 minutes.
Oh, man.
So,
wow.
And I said, well, next year I'm not going to make the same mistake next year. And, of course, the next year we didn't elect anybody. So I had to wait the year after that to finally start the new regime by phoning Phil Niekro.
Has it ever been difficult locating the guy?
Yeah, well, yes. Several times I've had to use a second number. Or in the case of Eddie Murray, he had turned his phone off for, as you'll find out, very good reason. And so I was able to phone him by contacting his wife. But they were in a limousine heading to the funeral of Eddie's sister.
Wow.
His sister had died that weekend. And, in fact, excuse me, Eddie, my allergies are kicking in. His sister had died that weekend, and he'd been the strong guy in the family until that morning. And he just lost it. So he turned his phone off. We had discussed the night before, because he used to count the night before, whether to call him earlier. And Jane Clark and I just felt the 12-hour, 14-hour difference was just too wide. And we said, we'll call him after the funeral tomorrow.
Where were they located? Where was she located?
They were in, I'm guessing California.
Uh-huh.
And, He it was funny because when I called, his wife didn't make the connection between Baseball Writers Association and the Hall of Fame, and she went on about how this is no time to, you know, seek a statement. And I said, no, it's not about that. And then I could hear him say, give me the phone.
Mm.
So then I gave him the information. I told him, our press conference tomorrow is canceled. You don't have to come to New York. We understand what you're going through. I just wanted you to know this. And he said, thank you and thank the writers. And he hung up.
Mm.
So I realized at the induction ceremony, I said, I need to talk to Mrs. Murray because I got to explain this thing to her. So I see her at the induction ceremony. I said, look, I have to explain something to you. She said, no, I have to explain something to you. She said, I didn't make the connection. And he just gave me the phone back. He never said anything the rest of the morning.
No kidding.
Right.
Oh, my God.
And he was so emotional, he said, you know what, I don't want people back at the house today. I just, you know, the heck with that. But when we got to the church, and when we got to home, so many people were there, and he got moved, and he said, you know what, let's bring people back. Let's stop at a Costco on the way back, and we'll pick up some food, and let's have people back to the house. So while they're online at the Costco, a fella, cash register, recognizes him, says, hey, Mr. Murray, congratulations. And she says, congratulations for what? And the cash register says, oh, didn't you hear? Your husband got elected to the Hall of Fame today. And she turned to him and said, is that what that phone call was?
Oh, my God.
So I said to Eddie, you know, if I'd have known you could keep a secret that long, I'd have called you the night before.
What a great story that is. Has anybody ever dialed a wrong number?
I've not dialed the wrong number, no. Never dialed the wrong number. I've dialed numbers that didn't answer. I've dialed numbers that got a voicemail, and I've just kind of waited. But I've never dialed a wrong number. We had a couple of situations where, in two cases, one with Wade Boggs and one with Bruce Sutter, in which someone called impersonating me.
Really?
Yes. And when I put Jane Clark on the phone with Boggsy, she said, that was Jack O'Connell. That was the guy that covered you for 5 years here in New York. And I remember another one reaction was by Tony Perez, who said, "Are you sure?" Because he too had waited a long time.
He had waited an awful long
time. And he got the information, and then he was fine.
Now this is the second part. We're with Jack O'Connell, the Secretary Treasurer of the Baseball Writers Association of America. He's the guy who informs the newest Hall of Famers that they're in. This is the second part of your day. On that day in which you pick up the phone and you call them. The first part of the day is you're actually in the room when the ballots are counted. What's that like?
Well, this is the second year, I believe, we've done this because they changed the announcement time from 2 in the afternoon to 6 in the evening. So we used to count the night before at the Ernst & Young building at Times Square. One of the partners of that firm, Mike DeLisi, and I do the counting together. We started that in 1997 after the shutout vote in 96. So this was our 20th anniversary doing it. But now we do it that morning.
Mm-hmm.
So we do and people won't believe it, but it's the truth. We do everything in one day now. John Shestakovsky, the new vice president of the hall, and I get there. I think we got there about 8:30 in the morning, and we have the ballots come into a post office box in Manhattan, and they're picked up every 2 or 3 days by Mike's assistant. They're then put in almost like a vault. In her office, and they're numbered, they're unopened, you know, she just takes them and then puts them together by number, and then that morning we go into a conference room up on the 31st floor there of that building, and here come the envelopes.
Wow.
And they're all stacked up for this year, 442 of them, and we open them one by one. Mike has a spreadsheet out, and I call out the names. He checks them off. All right, number two, boom, boom, boom. And this goes on for, maybe 3.5 hours. And then we do a second count. And in this case, because Hoffman was so close, we did a third just to make sure. Maybe we can find an extra ballot, a check or two. But, no, everything came out the same as the first count. We did that the year Burt Blyleven and Roberto Alomar were very close. And also a few years ago, Craig Biggio missed by 2 votes, and so we counted the 2 more times. The whole process takes about 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got to keep our mouths shut for a few hours to get our ducks in a row before that.
Boy,
making that phone call.
You got to really be able to keep a secret. What do you make, Jack, of this new trend of making the ballots public before you guys get in the room to count? You like it?
I'm not comfortable with it, no. But, I mean, writers have been writing columns about their Hall of Fame ballot, forever. And so someone got the idea of tracking these down so that if I write a column saying here are the 4 or 5 people I voted for, this person then, he sees that and he puts it down. And now it's become so popular that a lot of people just send in their ballots. But I'm not comfortable with it because I want each and every voter to vote his or her conscience, her belief, his belief, this person belongs in the Hall of Fame, and not look at somebody else's ballot and say, it looks like a lot of people are voting for this person. I guess I better vote for him, too. That's the part of it that I find disturbing. But I can't stop people from – it's their ballot. I can't stop them from telling people how they vote. I just wish they'd wait until it was over, and then they can explain their ballot. But I'm not comfortable with it, but there's not much I can do about it.
You vote, though, yourself, don't you, because you've qualified?
I do vote, yes.
Yeah. And do you want to tell us who you voted for, or would that be uncomfortable for you?
I'd rather not.
I didn't think so. All right. So let me ask you this. You mentioned earlier about tweets and emails, and, of course, there's the inevitable growing influence of the Internet. Talk about that in terms of threatening the confidentiality of what it is that you do.
Well, we've been fortunate, I guess, that we've been dealing with the Internet for some time now. We've not had a leak on this day, which I think says a lot. We do tell the Hall of Famers, look, the announcement's not for another hour, half hour, whatever it might be. Can you just keep it in the family till 6 o'clock Eastern? And it's amazing that they all have. We haven't had a leak. I mean, somebody might write, Jeff Bagwell's getting the Hall of Fame. That's a guess. So I think it's because they really value the institution. Mm. The Baseball Hall of Fame is something special. They don't want to louse it up. So since only two people know for, you know, several hours, it's easier to keep it, you know, keep it under wraps.
It really is, and you and I are prejudiced, and everybody can understand that we are prejudiced, but it really is, Jack, the most important Hall of Fame. I've never understood, and I don't know much about the process with regard to the National Football League, where it seems like they've got 43, 45, 47 voters, and I have no idea how it works, but it seems odd. Whereas here, the arguments are in eternity with regard to who gets in, who doesn't get in, and as you said, to qualify for 75% of the vote is really extraordinary.
Well, think of it. If you needed 75% of the vote to become president of the United States, the White House would be perpetually unoccupied.
Right.
I mean, I was just in Cooperstown for a couple of days this week. I'm also the chairman of the Historical Overview Committee of writers and historians who put together the era committee ballots, and we just formulated two ballots this week. And every time you're there, even in the winter when the city is half closed, but when you're in that building, it's just a special feeling. It's just a special feeling. And it's the only Hall of Fame that you don't have to identify the sport. If you say Hall of Fame, people immediately think Cooperstown, New York.
That's right.
The first one. That's the big one. And it's that special aura that it has that I think on that day when these people are notified, they're not going to turn around now and go on the Internet and spoil it for themselves.
Right.
So I think we have that going for us, that respect that these men who have played their entire careers, hoping beyond hope perhaps that someday this would happen, and they don't want to ruin it. They know the importance of it. In fact, while I was up there, John Scherholz, we ran into John Scherholz, who was having dinner up there. His walkthrough was yesterday, and you know John, and he's like a new man now. I mean, he feels like he's been anointed. It's just a terrific. To be part of this process is a great feeling.
And to be part of the opportunity to hear your stories is also great. Jack, thanks so much. So that'll do it for Jack O'Connell and myself on MLB.com. If you were on the move, thanks for the ride. And thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.